they may beware. لعلهم يحذرون. So this is a very interesting verse in that even at the time of war, Islam says that at least in some occasions, at least in many occasions, it's not the duty of all the Muslims to, I mean, leave the schools, the universities, I'm talking about our time and era, and go to war. No, we need people, some people going to, I mean, special schools to study the religion. So this is what we mean by wajib kifayi, meaning that an obligation upon some people.
Yes.
So when it comes to deducing the Islamic laws from the sources, it is the duty of, some people, and that is the reason we have all these Islamic seminaries, hawzas, and the great scholars who spend all their life in learning about all these different types and fields of Islamic studies. So this is their duty, and then the duty of other people who are not that learned, like in Islamic studies, is to follow these great scholars. And that is the whole philosophy of taqlid, or that's following. Right. Because all the people do not have enough time to spend the whole life, their whole lifetime to study about Islamic studies, which is a vast, knowledge. It's not only Quran and Hadith.
Yes.
No, there are many fields of studies, like even Arabic grammar, Arabic syntax, Rijal, Diraya, mm-hmm. logic, philosophy, and so on and so forth. So for that, either they need to be a mujtahid, a person who is able
yes.
to deduce Islamic laws from the okay. sources, or they need to act upon ihtiyat or precaution, which is very difficult, which means that, for example, if a scholar says that under this situation, you need to say a 2-rak'ah prayer, another scholar says that, no, you need to say a 4-rak'ah prayer, like in a journey, then acting upon precaution means that you need to do both, which is very difficult, and in some cases it's not possible.
That's right.
So, and the third option is to follow a mujtahid, okay. the more learned one, and the other conditions which are mentioned.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, 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 you'll find your way.
And beside mujtahids, you know, there are so many scholars, as you said, nowadays at the universities who are interested in a specific field of study. For example, we can say those people who are working on Mahdism, Mahdaviyat, okay? We can say there are so many doubts mm-hmm, and questions mm-hmm. regarding that point. There are some specific researchers who dedicated their life to that point, or Karbala history, or, for example, the history of Islam, or this and that. I say, even up to an extent that a mujtahid might not be able to answer those questions, but those people are, you know, it is a duty, as you say, of a Muslim to refer to such people to get the answer. But unfortunately, because of lack of time, you know, the engagement with different cases, the priority now is given to the doubts. And people are living with the doubts every day.
That's a very good point before going to the doubts. You refer to professors coming from
yes.
the university.
That's
a very good point, and thank you for sharing that. You know, unlike some other religions which believe that religious knowledge should be limited to, religious circles, like, for example, the churches and other people have no right to even read the Bible, at least from the viewpoint of Shia scholars, it's not like that. It doesn't mean that it is only the right of the people coming from the hawzas, from the seminaries to, go into the Islamic studies and become experts so that other people may refer to them. No, the gate is open to all the people.
Yes.
And some people, without joining the Islamic seminaries, they, try their best to, deeply read the Islamic studies, I mean, go into the Islamic studies.
Yes.
Many people coming from the universities, because nowadays in some countries, especially in Islamic Republic of Iran, we have a special fields in some universities which also teach the same content.
Yes.
Although still, I believe that even the listeners agree that in most of the cases, people coming from the seminaries, they may be preferred in from some dimensions because of the fact that they spend all their lives for this type of knowledge.
And there is a third group, the people who are from religious roots but attend the universities. I mean, that's right, something between the two. So there are so many centers, for example, nowadays in Islamic Republic, we are ready to answer the doubts and questions, okay, on religion.
So my point is that we cannot limit the knowledge to any circle, any school, excluding other institutions. No, the gate is open for all the people. Now, regarding all these doubts that they are raised nowadays, unfortunately, of course, having doubts is not an unfortunate phenomenon in and of itself. But the point is that many people, unfortunately, they just read the doubts and they do not refer to the scholars for finding the answers to the doubts. And the other point about this doubt is that when you see, a post is shared in social media, there is only, like, there are only 10 lines, but 20 doubts are mentioned in these 10 lines. About the history of Islam, about theology, about politics, and so on and so forth. So many questions in one post, and people are, attacked by, are bombarded by all these different various doubts. But then for a scholar to answer all these, like, only 10 questions, he's in need of, like, 30 pages.
Yes.
And no person has enough time, and he doesn't feel like going through all these 30 pages, and it makes it a bit complicated.
That's right.
I mean, people have access to the doubts, but they do not feel like finding and reading the answers.
That's right.
But the point is that, doubt in and of itself is not something bad.
Okay.
But we should not stay on this condition. As soon as you receive a doubt, you need to ask the scholars to know about
it.
If you do not have the opportunity, then stop reading such posts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either you need to be able to answer yourself.
Yes.
That is why you're spending time to read all these doubts. Otherwise, if you are not such a person, you need to find a scholar who is able to answer. And alhamdulillah, in all the cases, we have, enough scholars, many scholars, and convincing answers. You cannot find any unanswered misunderstanding and doubt. But the point is that almost in all the cases, the answers are much, much more lengthier than the questions and the doubts.
And sometimes, the cases with the scholars we are referring to, incapability in order to answer properly to the questions. This is the case too. For example, the people has a doubt regarding Imam Mahdi or this and that, the Holy Quran, whether the text was a miracle or not. They refer to the person who is not able to answer them properly. So the best answer is the simple answer, okay? The best answer is the improper answer. The best answer is the incomplete answer. They got it, and for example, they leave an obligation. That's why the duty of I believe, is on the shoulders of our scholars too, to make themselves great again, to achieve and to study a lot, This is the case.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And also let me add to that, that first of all, people should not expect all the people coming from seminaries to know all the answers to all the questions.
That's right.
We have so many fields of studies, and we need expert in each field. And second of all, for people coming from the seminary, they should not think that they know everything.
Yes.
So sometimes if, as a religious scholar, as a clergyman, people come to you asking questions on theology or philosophy, but you are an expert in Islamic laws, for example, then you may not, it would be much better if you refrain, if you avoid answering, instead introducing other people who are expert in that field of study.
That's right.
But my point is that Alhamdulillah, nowadays, with the blessings of the Islamic Republic of Iran and many other seminaries in Lebanon, Syria, yes. Iraq, and so on and so forth, we cannot find any question which is not answered, at least in three languages, Persian, Arabic, English, and in many cases, Urdu languages.
Yes.
So the answers are available,
yes.
but it is the duty of the people who, are faced with these doubts to find the answers and look for the answers. Okay.
The socio-political and the financial problems also of a country might overshadow, I would say, the religious concepts. Mm-hmm. So on such cases, I think referring to the scholars and ulama might help again.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. And thank you very much to the listeners for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Yemenis are urging their government to take decisive action to end the Saudi-led blockade on Yemen before the month of Ramadan begins. Due to Saudi Arabia's strangling blockade, food, fuel, and gas prices increased drastically during the holy month. Here at the Al Sanaa market, where many Yemenis do their shopping, customers said they want their government to adopt measures that will resuscitate Yemen's economy and end the continuous price hikes.
The strangling blockade is why food prices are increasing. When prices increase, it makes life harder for business owners.
We ask our government to improve our ballistic missile capability because it is our missile capability that will break the siege.
According to Mohammed Miftah, who is an advisor to the president of Yemen's Salvation Government, the cabinet's main task is to keep Yemen's battered economy afloat in the midst of a brutal war.
The government's main task, given the current circumstances, is to provide essential services like electricity, water, and building roads so people can travel. It's true, prices remain high. However, in the near future, the government aims to provide services at a lower price. In general, the main cause of the surge in prices is the Saudi blockade.
Mohammed Miftah says, despite the surge in prices, the Saudi-led coalition's war on Yemen's economy is leading to nowhere.
The enemy was hoping to strangle Yemen's economy completely by preventing all fuel and gas from entering Yemen. We have successfully foiled this plan, and now fuel and gas are available even though they're slightly overpriced. The important thing is that they're available, which is more important.
For the time being, the Yemeni government shows a willingness to engage in peaceful political dialogue to end the war. However, much of the public has lost hope in the peace process.
Yemeni people are calling on the Salvation Government to break Saudi Arabia's siege on the country before the holy month of Ramadan. Sana'a has called on Riyadh to lift the blockade multiple times. The kingdom has so far refused the requests, which means Yemen's next option could be a military one. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
The memory of the rape and murder of pedestrian Sarah Everard in 2020 by then Metropolitan Police Officer Wayne Cousins is seared on everybody's mind here. The police commissioner at the time, Cressida Dick, called it a case of a few bad apples in the force and promised action to weed them out. She was soon forced to resign, leaving a police force in crisis. The latest scandal to rock the mat, David Carrick, an officer from the same unit as Wayne Cousins, pleading guilty to tens of offenses, including rape against 12 women over nearly two decades. The response from the new commissioner, Mark Rowley, an apology and the promise of a cleanup. Yet critics of the Metropolitan Police Force say they don't think that will solve the problem.
I think the proposition that it's just a few bad apples has been blown completely out the water. What we have in reality is a deeply systemized culture of misogyny and racism that speaks and exists at the very heart, the core of the Metropolitan Police Service. It is beyond reform. It is beyond saving.
The Force Commissioner Rowley commands was placed under special measures last year after revelations of bullying, racial discrimination, and misogyny among some of its officers against people inside and outside the force. New anonymous revelations from serving police officers speak of a culture of racism and sexual abuse in the force, which has left some black staff suicidal.
The issue is that systematized culture actually targets and alienates black and ethnic minority officers. And that has a profound impact upon their family life, their mental health, their physical health. And we've seen examples, haven't we, time and time again, of black officers suffering life-changing, transforming trauma as a consequence of facing racism in the Met.
These are dark days for Britain's largest police force, with confidence in policing already at an all-time low. And the recent admission by one of its own will worsen trust in the people who are supposed to be protecting society. Cyper is up, London.
Latest surveys are indicating that more and more people in Italy are against continuing to send weapons to Kiev and are calling for a peaceful settlement of the conflict in Ukraine. According to a Euromedia poll, over half of Italians, about 52%, oppose supplying Ukraine with modern Western-made weapons, up several percentage points from mid-December. Furthermore, almost 7 out of 10 respondents were also against a possible intervention of NATO in the conflict.
Sending more weapons doesn't make any sense. More arms means more destruction and a never-ending war.
After weeks of doubts, Italy has confirmed it is ready to supply Ukraine with its highly costly SAMP-T air defense system. Italy only has 5 SAMP-T batteries, which has led to concerns over the weakening of the country's defense capability. Also, other polls show a growing opposition among Italians to an even more active role by the Giorgia Meloni government in the conflict. According to a survey commissioned by the state broadcaster RAI, an overwhelming majority of Italians, almost 80%, believe that the Ukraine conflict is far away from them. Another survey carried out by market research company SWG has revealed over half of Italian citizens oppose the government's plans to raise defense spending to 2% of GDP by 2028. Doing so would align the country with NATO's desired threshold.
I think that increasing our spending on weapons now is insane. We are already strangled by high inflation, high cost of living. I'm against the government's plan.
Italy counts very little at an international level. I am afraid it would be much more useful to remain inside the current international context and go with the flow.
Italy's next aid and military package to Ukraine is to be announced by the Meloni government in the early days of February. Max Civili, Rome.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, tempers are running high in Pakistan over the repeated Islamophobic incidents by some European countries in recent days. Outraged Pakistanis took to the streets of the capital Islamabad after Friday prayers to condemn the West for what they call its malicious anti-Islamic agenda.
Burning of Muslims' holy book by these Western nations proved that Islamophobic acts were not an expression of freedom of speech, but extremism. Sadly, extremism exists and is growing everywhere in Europe. It's time for European nations to think about who's promoting extremism by desecrating other religions.
Protesters chanted slogans and vented their anger against the silence of the West regarding repeated incidents of desecration of Holy Quran and the Prophet Muhammad. Demonstrators also called on Muslim nations to boycott European goods over what they describe as the West's insolent behavior.
We strongly condemn the blasphemous incident of desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden. The incident is the worst and most heartbreaking act in Europe. There is no room for such a sad incident in a civilized society.
Demonstrators are demanding that the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, known as OIC, raise its voice against the growing intolerance against Islam and anti-Muslim acts across the globe.
It's time for the OIC to play its role in urging Muslim nations to stand united against Western conspiracies. Europe wants to ignite Muslims by doing such blasphemous acts. Once we are united, Europe will not dare to repeat such Islamophobic acts.
The countrywide rallies came days after Pakistan denounced what it described as the abhorrent act of desecration of the Quran in Sweden and the Netherlands, saying such acts disrespect Muslims across the globe.
Condemnations continue to pour in from Muslim countries across the world. Yemen, Qatar, along with other Islamic nations, joined Iran, Pakistan, and Turkey to denounce the desecration. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
People of Afghanistan are extremely upset about the deplorable and shocking act of some extremist individuals in Sweden and Holland in desecrating the Holy Quran, which is taken as a disrespect towards not just the Holy Book of Muslims, but all holy scriptures, by tearing the Holy Quran and setting it on fire. The primitive and uncivilized act of a bunch of radical elements in Europe has raised robust condemnation from Afghan people against such abominable act.
They claim human rights and still burn the Holy Quran. It looks like it's only for themselves. We want the Swedish government to punish the perpetrator of this action and also ask Islamic countries to be united against this action.
Even when such people insult the Holy Quran, the book's value increases for us. If we are not burning their holy books in response today, it is because of the teaching of the Holy Quran to have a peaceful relation with all people.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has also condemned the awful action and called for punishment of its perpetrators in Sweden and Holland.
We ask the government of Sweden to punish the perpetrators of this crime and do not let such individuals to act in provocative and heinous ways against the holy books.
The Holy Quran is simply a fundamental element to unite Muslims, so that Afghan politicians from various groups and ethnicities, including former administrators and current statesmen at the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, break ranks with the disgusting radical act towards the holy book committed by some extremist groups in Europe, and roundly condemned the disgusting act under the guise of freedom of speech. The Afghan politicians unanimously announced that the spirit and essence of coexistence of ideas and thoughts is definitely on the line, then on.
During the protest, people of Afghanistan have called for the unity among believers of all Ibrahimic religions towards such targeted attacks, which have mainly aimed at weakening believing souls and freedom seekers of the entire world, and not just Islam and Muslims. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Thousands of people have taken part in the funeral procession of Palestinians killed in the Israeli forces raid on the West Bank city of Jenin Thursday. Carrying the martyrs' bodies, the mourners chanted slogans condemning the Israeli crimes. It was early Thursday when Palestinian media reported the regime forces raid on the Jenin refugee camp. The savage attack left the residents and popular resistance groups based in the camp with no choice but to defend themselves and confront the regime forces.
What happened today in Jenin Governorate is a massacre in the very sense of the word.
We received 8 martyrs and 1 martyr in Ibn Sina Hospital. In addition to 18 wounded, 3 of them are in a very serious condition. Most of the injuries were due to direct targeting with the aim of killing.
Later in the day, the Israeli troops fatally shot another Palestinian in the town of Al-Ram, near the occupied city of Al-Quds. The Palestinian was killed during a protest against the Israeli forces' raid on Jenin. With a total death toll of 10, January 26th turned into one of the deadliest days in the occupied West Bank since Israel's military raids intensified at the start of last year. Iran's foreign ministry reacted to the bloody incident. It called on Muslim countries to unite and coordinate their actions in support of the oppressed Palestinian nation and the resistance to stop the apartheid regime's acts of terror. Palestinian resistance groups have also condemned the Israeli atrocity in the strongest words, calling for continued resistance against the regime.
The massacre that the Israeli occupation army committed in Jenin confirms the racist, fascist and criminal nature of the right-wing occupation government. This aggression, in addition to the continued violations at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and of the rights of the Palestinians in Israel, shows that this government insists on escalating the situation.
Our resistance will carry on and shall not back off from confronting this Zionist occupier, and the killing will not intimidate us and will not be intimidated by these threats made by the criminal leaders of this Zionist entity.
Palestinian resistance movements say the latest Israeli raid on Jenin comes within the context of recent escalations, especially in light of the new far-right cabinet headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his extremist allies. Hamas and Islamic Jihad have both expressed readiness to fight back in case these raids continue. Analysts believe that Palestinians need to bolster resistance against Israel to neutralize the regime's vicious plots.
The resistance should continue and should be escalated against the Israeli, and they should know that they should pay the price for all crimes they are committing.
Actually, they mean to eliminate the resistance in the West Bank, in the occupied West Bank, to pave the way to construct more Israeli settlements in the West Bank, in which we all know that these settlements are internationally illegal.
Jenin is among those areas in the northern West Bank where Israel intensified its raids over the past year in an attempt to crack down on the Palestinian resistance. In addition to Palestinian resistance fighters, civilians confronting the Israeli army during such raids and even bystanders have been killed mercilessly. More than 170 Palestinians, including at least 30 children, were killed across the occupied West Bank last year. Moreover, at least 29 Palestinians, including 5 children, have been killed in January 2023 alone.
I'm heading with humanitarian aid workers to drop off desperately needed supplies to civilians on the outskirts of Donetsk. Recently, fighting has become fierce as Russia seeks to advance across much of Donbass. A Russian tank fires at Ukrainian positions. As we drive, the boom of incoming not far off, we see the smoke rising from amongst the trees. A few moments later, a Russian artillery unit emerges from the site of the strike. They were hit. We arrive at the arranged gathering site to drop off the supplies. These people live only hundreds of meters from the front and spend most of their time cowering in their apartments.
Now, while I have reported on dozens of the Ukrainian terror strikes in the center of Donetsk, where there are no discernible military targets, bus stations, schools, markets, here we're so close to the front line that the civilians who live here run the extreme risk of getting hit by indirect Ukrainian fire. You can hear the constant incoming and outgoing around these areas. The people here tell me that just yesterday a music school was hit, killing a local man.
Tatiana Montion is a renowned Ukrainian lawyer, today helping to deliver aid.
Where they have to live. You can imagine how many people here. It's about 100,000 people all around the front line. How is it possible to move these people somewhere in safe place? It's impossible, absolutely impossible. So we do what we do. They have no shops, they have no transport, they have no possibility to feed themselves, so we help them.
Tatiana fled Kiev to Donbass 2 years ago fearing arrest for her outspoken criticism of the Ukrainian government.
Everybody here understands that it's United States made all this trash to weaken European economy, to crash European economy, to force European industry to move to United States. Everybody here understands it. But why not European people? Ordinary people, of course, because I am sure that European top elite understands it best of all. But they're too corrupt to tell about it to their peoples.
On our way to the next drop-off, we're stopped by Russian soldiers. They tell us not to carry on the same road. We get out of the car to assess our options. There is heavy fire nearby. That's the reality across much of Donbass. Back in the car, massive incoming close by, and we're left no choice but to drive fast. In this desolate post-apocalyptic wasteland, it's artillery doing most of the killing. At the next drop-off, this woman tells me her mother is dying on the other side of the front, so she can't be with her in her final days. She breaks down in tears, saying she wants both sides to negotiate a peace. With peace negotiations further away than ever, both Russia and NATO seem determined to end this war with brute force. For the civilians trapped along either side of the battle lines, survival is a daily chore. Many won't see the end of the war. Many won't see the end of this week. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Celebrating January 26th, best known as Australia Day, has become increasingly controversial in recent years, with people holding rallies on this day to highlight the historical plight of Aboriginals. Many Indigenous Australians who traced their lineage on the continent back 50,000 years regard it as Invasion Day. Tens of thousands of protesters lined up in Sydney, while thousands more gathered in Melbourne, Canberra, and other cities, saying the day marks the beginning of colonial oppression and genocide.
Nobody's got the right to celebrate genocide. That's it. This is ground zero, genocide. Ground zero happened here on 26th of January, 1788. Nobody should be celebrating. It's not an event to celebrate.
The government has designated January 26th as National Day, which marks the anniversary of the 1788 arrival of the first fleet of British ships in Port Jackson. But protesters believe the government is still trying to gloss over the scale of British colonizers' crimes against Native Australians.
I think most white Australians would not celebrate this day at all if they knew exactly that level of depression and deep sadness.
There are several accounts of how colonizers wiped out Indigenous communities in Australia through brutal and heart-wrenching repression. Emily Caroline Cray, a young settler traveling through northwest Queensland in 1883, recounts some of the British colonizers' horrendous crimes in her personal diary.
The station owner has 40 pairs of blacks' ears nailed around the walls collected during raiding parties after the loss of many cattle speared by the blacks.
Aboriginal people remain the most disadvantaged Australians, with higher rates of poverty, health issues, and imprisonment than any other community. Now, more than 2.5 centuries later, they're still struggling to find their feet in a white-dominated society. Australia's Prime Minister is planning to hold a referendum in March on recognizing around 4% Indigenous people in the Constitution. But repeated calls to abolish the controversial National Day have fell on deaf ear, as the government remains adamant to celebrate what many call the anniversary of Australia's colonization.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The capital cities of European countries have been paralyzed by anti-government strikes and protests since the start of 2023. These strikes and protests still continue as European workers demand higher pay and better working conditions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kahan International wrote in this regard, several sectors across Europe have been impacted by strikes as workers demand higher pay and better working conditions. Around 300 flights were cancelled at the Berlin Brandenburg Airport as workers went on a strike recently, the airport has announced. Those flights would have transported some 35,000 passengers. Affected passengers are asked to contact their airline for information on rebooking and alternative travel options, the airport added in a statement. Employees in security, ground handling services, and the company running the airport were striking over a pay dispute. The airport opened in 2020 after significant delays and construction problems. Berlin-Brandenburg Airport continues to struggle financially with a lot of debt, but is working on becoming financially independent, a spokesperson said. According to the local German news agency, postal workers also in Germany have extended their strike to January 28 in an ongoing conflict over wages. Following a walkout that saw 6,000 postal workers withdraw their labor, the Union Verdi has called on employees in Deutsche Post letter and parcel division to continue the strike. The latest round of warning strikes was called by Union Verdi after pay negotiations between Deutsche Post and its employees ground to a halt. The workers' side is demanding 15% more pay for approximately 160,000 pay scale employees in the post and parcel Germany sector, a figure that Deutsche Post says is far too high. The move followed 3 days of warning strikes last week in which an estimated 30,000 postal workers took part. 1 million parcels and 3 million letters went undelivered across the country over the course of the walkout. Responding to the news of the recent strike, a spokesperson for Deutsche Post said Verdi's move was hard to understand, since the company had planned to make an offer to its workforce on February 8. He added, these strikes are unnecessary because in the end they are only to the detriment of our customers. Along with subsidiary DHL, Deutsche Post is one of the largest courier companies in the world and represents the majority of Germany's postal service. Originally state-owned, it was privatized in late 90s, but the German government still maintains a stake in the company's stock. Workers at an Amazon warehouse in Coventry became the first in the UK to go on a strike over the company's low pay. The workers voted in mid-December to go on a strike. The fact that they are being forced to go on a strike to win a decent rate of pay from one of the world's most valuable companies should be a badge of shame for Amazon, said GMB senior organizer Amanda Gearing in a press release when the vote happened. A spokesperson for GMB Union said the workers make £10.50 as a base rate per hour, but the workers are asking for £15. Around 300 workers went on a strike recently at the Amazon warehouse in the UK. Also, Italy's petrol station operators have been on strike across the country since Tuesday evening, January 25th, although self-service stations remain open. The action is taking place on both motorways and local routes. Unions, however, are divided on how long the strike will last. Some operators will continue their strike, while others will end it. The main reason for the strike is the obligation for operators to display a panel showing the regional average fuel price. Unions say the government's measure is accusing operators of speculating on gas prices at the expense of the consumers. Despite the strike, however, Italian law requires that at least 50% of stations in urban areas remain open. On motorways, there should be at least one station operating every 100 kilometers. The leaders of France's eight biggest unions were holding a press conference in Paris over the government's controversial pension reform recently, which aims to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. According to a poll conducted in January by IFOP, the reform is opposed by 68% of French people. The proposal has already triggered fierce protests in France, with opposition parties arguing the retirement age should be reduced instead. Last week, over 1 million people took to the streets against the planned overhaul. In Paris, police clashed with protesters, with doctors having to amputate the body parts of a young man after he was clubbed in the region by a police officer.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to a new episode of your favorite youth station. I hope you're doing well. Well, this is Asma, and guess what? Brother Muzaffar isn't here.
Yeah, that's me. I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Assalamu
alaikum, everybody. Thank you for having me. You didn't do the choo-choo-ka-choo. I don't get it.
Yes, of course, we did it in your place.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. But
in
now
your
that
honor.
I'm back, we still need to have that.
So the floor is yours. You can do it right now.
Choo choo ka choo. It's a youth station for you. Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, how are you doing, brother?
I'm fine. Just exam season, isn't it? So, I've just been stressed about that. I'm sure you're stressed as well.
Of course. Yeah, same in here.
Exams, exams, exams.
Yeah, may Allah help us.
Inshallah. May Allah help everybody.
Us. Every single one. The youth needed more, I guess. For every single thing. Because, you know, this is the beginning of their journey. Mm. And then if we turn in the wrong track, then things are going miserable.
Definitely. You're like a flexible tree at the moment. You know, you can still bend and bow and
exactly.
pick up the rays of the sun. But eventually you're going to turn into a thick tree trunk and you won't be able to flex anymore.
Exactly.
Stiff.
That's the point.
That's you. You're not changing anymore.
Especially if we get addicted to different things.
Addictions, yeah. We need to actually phase out those addictions from an early age. And that's something I've really learnt the hard way, because now, like, am I still a youth? Am I still a
youth? Of course you
are.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. If I am considered youth, then you are youth as well.
Alhamdulillah. So there's loads of things that I don't want to use the word addicted to, but really, really, like, you know.
Isn't it habit?
I had bad habits when I was younger.
Shall we use them simultaneously? I mean, interchangeably.
Interchangeable, I guess.
But it seems like addiction is more chronic.
Addiction is, once you're addicted, it's almost like there's no going back.
So what about habit?
Habits become addictions, I guess. Yeah. It's like the old saying, you know, that wise saying that they have, control your thoughts because your thoughts become your words. Control your words because your words become your actions. Control your actions because your actions become your habits. And then control your habits because your habits become your character.
Exactly.
And then your character, obviously, it goes on to become your destiny. So that middle part right there is your habits, and, you know, which we are kind of taking the liberty to kind of redefine as addictions, because habits.
So it's the first step of making an addiction. Let's say habits are the
bad
first
habits,
step of that.
Yes, I mean, addiction can be a good thing.
Yes, addiction to good things.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should all be addicted to God.
Yeah,
we should be so addicted to God that, you know, we're always doing dhikr of Allah, and that's a beautiful thing to
which
have.
Which needs too much of practice.
Yeah, I suppose it does. It does. And I think a lot of the sunnah that we have, a lot of the practices that we have in Islam are designed to get us to that point where we get addicted to God.
So, to get addicted.
For example, before you start a meal, the very, very basic mundane things that you do in your day, before you start a meal, have a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
You know, it's sunnah of the Prophet.
Yeah.
Before you start speaking to anybody, you say, assalamu alaikum, right? Salam qabla. Kalam, you know.
So we do all these things
all
on
these
a daily
things,
basis.
All these things, right.
So these
things
are not going to make me addicted to Allah.
Well, it makes you addicted to Allah because these things are not the real purpose. Some people think that that's the real purpose.
Of course,
that the purpose is to get this divine reward. And part of the purpose perhaps is that. But the real wisdom behind it is to get you more and more connected to God in the mundane, usual, normal stuff that you do in the day.
Exactly.
You see? And then so through that, you'll start to build this relationship and you're constantly remembering God, everything that you're doing.
It becomes something unconscious.
Yeah. And that's what addiction is. Let's go back to the negative addiction. What is it? It's like this constant ticking. I want this.
Exactly,
I need
the
this.
Desire.
A person
the
who's
desire for something.
A smoker, for example, you know, they'll be having a beautiful meal. They'll be enjoying the best meal in the world. They'll have a few bites, but eventually what they will really start thinking about is the cigarette thereafter, right?
Yeah.
Therefore, even when you are enjoying something which is wholesome and good for you, you're thinking about something bad for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
You just hit it very much directly into the head, but I wanted to get into there very surreptitiously, but it didn't happen.
I do apologize.
So let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. This is Youth Station. I am Asma, your friend, and then here I have Brother Muzaffar with me. We're talking about something which can be both good and bad. It depends on how it happens.
Sister Asma wanted to enter this discussion very surreptitiously, very subtly, very quietly. She wanted to sneak up on you guys, but I was like, bang, we're talking about addiction.
I wanted to make it more relatable, but then you just went directly into the heart
sorry,
of
please,
the issue.
Please. I want to hear how you make it more relatable.
So what comes to your mind, the first thing that actually comes to your mind when you hear the word addiction is what?
Drugs.
Yeah.
Drugs, yeah. Cocaine, weed.
And do you have a special addiction yourself?
Oh, yeah. I have addictions.
Would it be personal if I ask what?
It would be personal, but I mean, yeah.
It's okay, let's share it.
Video games. video games.
So you're one of those people who are addicted to those games.
Are you calling me a nerd? Is that what you're implying here? No. Do you know what? When I was a kid, one of the only things I would enjoy in the day is when I would come home from school and I could just play my video game. That was so cool. And and it built a habit, as we were saying before the break, right? You built a habit. Right? After this, after I do my homework, after I come back from school.
Whatever, as a reward.
I get my hour of video games.
Yeah.
And if I've been a really good boy, then my mum would let me play for 2 hours. And I was like, whoa!
And on then the weekend.
So anyway, that became a habit. And now I'm a grown man. And it's really sad, but I really love...
You still have the same habit.
I still have the same habit. Now, after playing a video game for like an hour or two, I feel like, well, I've just wasted 2 hours.
And do you feel the need that you have to change this habit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's face it. Everything that you do which doesn't benefit you in this world or the hereafter is just a waste of time.
But how come it doesn't benefit me? Just the case that you mentioned, just like playing games or watching movies like what I do. Well, it is going to have some benefits for me because I enjoy that. And that's a reward in itself.
That's true. That's why I'm not saying it's haram.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's definitely not haram. And I enjoy watching movies as well. And I think that's another one as well. You end up watching a lot of movies and stuff. These things are not haram. Mm-hmm. You're not doing anything like that's going to count as a sin, right? Alhamdulillah, Allah has saved us from, you know, terrible sins like alcohol. Alcoholism is an addiction on its
of
own.
Course,
you know, other forms of drugs.
A severe one.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it destroys families. It destroys relationships. It does all sorts of things, right? But video games are safe.
Yeah, they're safe.
Relatively
watching
speaking.
Movies are safe.
Yeah, relatively speaking, right?
Yeah, reading books are safe. These are good addictions, I guess. But still, after finishing what you call as watching movies, then you come with this idea that, did I just waste my time?
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. And the answer is yes, probably. Most probably.
But wasn't it about to make you more mature and teach me something?
Oh, this is where we're getting at, okay? Because you seem to strike me as the educated type, right? And your type usually watches movies that you haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right? I haven't seen this movie. I want to see it. I want to expand my horizons.
Of course. Right. Yeah, expand my horizons.
Well, for other people... Mm-hmm. Pathetic people like myself, it's not like that. I will literally, I've watched The Dark Knight Rises like 30 times.
Yeah, and that's very beautiful.
It's pathetic.
Every single time
I've watched The Lord of the Rings, no exaggeration, maybe like 100 times. And it's a 3 hour
yeah,
long,
it's
4
such a
hour
long,
long
movie
now, and there's 4 films, so that's 4, 8, 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
If you calculate it all, it's like a year of my life.
Yeah,
I've given to just watching that or playing the video games or that. So it is a waste of time for a lot of people. You're not just expanding your horizons. Albeit, every time I do watch a movie again, mm-hmm. I watch it with a new perspective and I notice new details.
Exactly.
And those
yes.
kinds of things are definitely there. But at the end of the day, guys, is there no better way that you could have spent your time?
No.
Really?
Because, you know, I enjoy that. When I enjoy it, then there it is.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
You know, Imam Khomeini, he used to have, because we're supposed to like allocate different parts of our day to different things, right? And a part of your day in Islam is supposed to be for recreational purposes, right? It is supposed to be for your fun time. Another part of your day is supposed to be for your work time. And the beautiful thing about Imam Khomeini is he would never substitute any time for the other. So if this is time for that, I'm going to do that. And if this is time for that, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, so we have to have a plan.
You've got to have a plan. And if it fits into your schedule, then that's another thing. But we are talking about addiction here. And what happens when you're addicted is you end up binging.
Mm-hmm.
You binge, right? You watch a movie, then you watch another movie, then you watch another movie and another one.
Then you know how the cycle goes.
And then you're just not satisfied, so you start scrolling through your phone.
It's all more. You want some more.
You just start watching video after video, and then it just does become
full. And you know, since this technology is just concurring everywhere, and every single person has got a cell phone, and then we have Instagram, we have TikTok, and then we have YouTube, and then we have a lot of things to entertain us. So, but we do not call it addiction, you know. The problem is that we do not recognize that this is an addiction.
We don't recognize it as addiction, but it has exactly the same effect, according to one researcher, as cocaine. Cocaine will give you this dopamine buzz.
Yeah,
it'll give
exactly.
you this kind of shot of of instant pleasure, this instant gratification in your head. And the social media does the same thing.
Exactly.
Right? The video games, all these other addictions, they pretty much do the same thing. They give you that burst of pleasure. And then when you're not getting it, you are thinking about it later on. That's addiction, guys.
Exactly.
When it's constantly ticking, it's like a monkey on your back. It's saying, you know, you still need to do this thing.
And we cannot cure ourselves from that addiction unless we just recognize that we are being addicted to something.
Well, there's two ways. So one of them is the one that we mentioned, right? Is to have a timetable. Look, Islam is structured. I hated this. Astaghfirullah. When I was younger, I really hated this because I want
to
be free, man. I want to do what I want, when I want, when I feel like it, all right? But no, Islam has a very specific structure in place. You know, the five daily prayers. When the sun is highest in the sky, when the sun has not yet risen, and when the sun has set. Very specific timings. Mm-hmm. And Allah actually wants us to fit our life into a certain schedule. If we do that, then it's going to save us
from... So you mean that in itself is a sign to teach us that we should have a planned timetable or whatever it.
Now, if you have a timetable, like for example, when I was a kid, my timetable was only on the weekends I'm allowed to play video games, for example. And that really helped me to grow and to think of new ideas of how to entertain myself. Now I'm an adult. Man, I can play any time I like. Now I'm an adult. I have freedom.
Yes.
You know, when I was a kid and adults would talk to me and they'd say, oh, no, I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. That's not entirely true. Adults do have time.
Well, I would say no. I don't know what happens to time when you grow older.
Yeah, it starts to go faster.
It goes so fast in a way that even when you have a plan in a day, you cannot afford doing all of the things that you have planned for. I don't know why, but it just doesn't go the right way. So I can just relate to what they say, I don't have time. We should have this self-control. And I guess if we practice, we can achieve that. And I'm so sure that we can still talk about that so much because addiction is something nice to talk about, but very hard to fight against.
We don't have any more time to discuss this, inshallah. We could go on discussing it, but maybe another time. From myself, from Sister Asma, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.